time to awake from your sleep. Rise to a new day with each your soul to keep. Come, my children, time to awake from your sleep.
Hello and welcome to the Enlightened Medicine Show with Dr. Valerie Olmsted, the holographic physician. And I'd like to mention to you all that our show is brought to you by Hydramay Skin Nutrition. And you can find them at www.hydramay.com. They have wonderful, organic, all-natural skin nutrition. So you can pretend you're a kid again, smear it all over your face, and eat it that way. And it's a lot. It's really fun. And it gets absorbed very quickly, too, which is what I really like about it. It doesn't leave any greasy residue or anything. It's really cool. If you haven't tried it yet, please do. It's reasonably priced, and they have quite a few skincare products, not just for women. There's products for men. There's shaving cream, and there's lip balm and all kinds of stuff, so please do give them a try. Okay, tonight on our show, we have Dr. Jude Curvin on again, and you might have remembered when she was on last time and talked about her book Cosmos. And we're going to be talking about that again tonight and also another of her books called The Eighth Chakra. So this is going to be a lot of fun, and I think we may have some very interesting information coming up, because you know how spirit works sometimes and just like slaps you upside the head with something really interesting that you don't even know that you are pronouncing. So this will be fun. So welcome to the show, Dr. Jude.
Oh, it's lovely to be with you, Dr. Valerie, again, and to all our listeners.
Yeah, this is going to be so much fun. I know they love it when you're on the show because they, you know, I tend to ask you those questions that they're all thinking.
That's
so
great.
This will be a lot of fun. And I would like to have you get into your books a little bit. But first, let me have you give a short bio of who you are and what got you into writing about such wonderful things as how to use quantum physics in your life.
Well, if I go back to when I was a little girl, Valerie, I had my first clairaudient or psychic experience when I was 4 years old. And from there, I've had what I would call for spiritual guidance, higher guidance, all my life, and have literally walked between worlds all my life. I've also got a master's degree in quantum physics and cosmology, and a doctorate in archaeology researching ancient cosmologies. I work with the wisdom keepers of many traditions around the world. I also, in what seems to be another life, but it really was in this life, a high-powered businesswoman traveling the world. But I now educate and advise worldwide, essentially to empower others and raise consciousness. I'm a Hay House author of 4 books, including, as you say, Cosmos, and the Eighth Chakra, and the 13th Step. And my website's www.judecurvin.com for anyone who'd like to visit it.
Let me write that down for the people that are on the fast chat, because they will be asking me. So here we go. I'm putting it on the fast chat. There you go, listeners. And for those of you that are just listening and not on the fast chat, that, oops, it didn't take it. It is www.judecurrivan.com. And you can find all kinds of interesting things there that Dr. Jude has written and find out about her schedule of events and things like that. And I'm going to have you on the show again to talk about the 13th one also. But the first book, we paid a lot of attention to Cosmos, because that was your latest book at the time. I'd like to focus a little bit more on the eighth chakra today, but we can certainly mention, I can't think they kind of segue, you know, into each other. And whatever else kind of hits us as we go along here.
Well, let's see what comes.
Yeah. Well, one of the things that I found very interesting in your eighth chakra book is, first of all, you've got the 12 steps, the journey of the soul, our hero, as in S-O-U-L-A-R. And I love that you offer steps. You know, here's like, okay, here you go. Here's your map. You get to this step and you've seen this, and you get to this step and you've seen that. So that, I thought that was pretty cool, the way that you put that together for people to kind of judge, you know, okay, where am I really there? And what is it I'm looking for?
Well, exactly. I'm really glad you enjoyed that and found it helpful. And a lot of people are finding it helpful. But, you know, it's funny, isn't it? Because it's really a dance of life rather than a step-by-step journey. I always say to people, mm-hmm. think of it more like when you learn to dance and you're learning the steps, how to dance. And, you know, it's a one step forward, a step to the side, a couple of twirls, et cetera, et cetera. So these 12 steps really, I suppose I discovered through my own inner journey of discovery that I do write about in the 13th step. And they seem to be, for everyone who was journeying with us, they were so resonant for all of us that they felt part of a bigger sort of, you know, holographic pattern that would work for everyone. And when you look back into the sort of the myths and legends of the solar heroes, they too all journey from this initial place where they don't really know who they are and they feel lost and lonely and unsure. And their journeys really are as much of that inner journey of self-discovery as any sort of outward heroic journey that they undertake. And for many of the myths and legends, they too have this 12-step journey, you know, like the 12 labors of Hercules, or mm-hmm. There's lots of 12s and 13s in a lot of these legends. And it just felt very appropriate to, you know, to share this sense of this inner journey of self-discovery.
Yeah, and really, you know, the thing that I love about the way that you write, Jude, is that, you know, all of us have a piece of the puzzle. And what I find, you know, my own journey has shown me that we all end up at the same place no matter where we started from.
Absolutely.
And so I always tell people, don't get caught up in religions, because it doesn't matter which religion you started with or which one is your favorite, because in your journey, you're probably going to pick up more than one, and you're going to integrate everything, and you're going to become this kind of universal citizen, because that's where we're headed. And I love the way that you have the steps here. Like, you have the first step is responsibility. And just to speak that here in the United States right now is interesting, because we have people going crazy here and not wanting to take responsibility for anything and trying to point in other directions, and they're not getting away with it now, which I think is great.
I do too. I mean, I as you know, I'm one of the things that I look to as well is astrology, because, you know, as Carl Jung said, you know, it's the deepest tool he knew to understand human personality. And, of course, not just on a personal but also collective level. So what I do is I look at the sort of the bigger picture influences that are supporting us and guiding us and influencing us at the moment. And there are some amazing influences that really do talk to what you're just saying, and also talk to this new emergence, but also the old sort of paradigm trying to hold on. Mm-hmm. And what's great, of course, is that the if you like, the cosmic influences are supporting this transformation. They are supporting us moving towards more responsibility, more empowerment, greater co-creativity. But they also recognize that, you know, the old vested interests. And I was watching the whole healthcare discussion in the finance committee earlier on C-SPAN. And, you know, what happened with the insurers coming out last weekend. And, you know, those old vested interests, you know, are going to fight as long as they can fight. But I think it's for everyone to take responsibility and to really see what is going on in the bigger picture and to go forward and to go forward together.
Absolutely, because if you don't take responsibility, you can't make it to the next step.
Absolutely.
And, I mean, you have to confront what's going on and your part in it, and your part of what has been allowed. And so many of us, you know, have looked at how things have transpired in the last couple of years and said, my God, how did that happen? Well, it happened because people didn't take responsibility. You know, they gave it to the government. They gave it to these other people that promised them the moon and gave them nothing.
Exactly.
And then they're shocked, you know, oh, how could this happen? Well, gee, you know, if you all stood up and said, no, it wouldn't have happened. And still you have people quaking in their boots, which brings us to the second step, fear or love.
Exactly. And for me, and I suspect for many of our listeners, you know, this is something we all confront every day, you know, in many, many different choices we make. Do we make those choices from fear or do we make them from love? And you know, my sense is this is such a time of turmoil, but if we actually look and see the bigger picture, we realize that turmoil is inevitable. If we're going to move from the old, unsustainable, limited, fear-based way of being to an empowered and empowering and love-based fear. You know, the old way used to be the love of power. The new way is the power of love. And to do that, we literally have to take that leap into love, personally and collectively.
Yeah, maybe without knowing where we're going to land.
Sure.
You know, people keep looking for, like, a guarantee of where they're going to end up. And if you spend your life that way, that really is living in fear. You know, people think, oh, well, I'm being cautious. And I look at it and say, no, you're being afraid.
Exactly.
And so you don't get to...
I was just going to say, don't you find in your own life, you know, certainly I know in my own life journey, my biggest, the biggest issues, the biggest problems is where I have held on, as you say, from that sense of fear. And when I really have gone from the heart and taken a leap, sure, into the unknown, but into love, every single time that has been the most expanding and the most incredible experiences of my life.
Absolutely, because you're allowing something new in, and you're saying to the universe, okay, I don't know where this is going, so show me.
Exactly.
And it does.
It sure does.
I can tell you, when I do the quantum vortex stuff, you know, people say, well, what do I say? What if I say it wrong? And I say, well, don't worry about it. Go in there and say, show me the next step in my spiritual evolution, or show me the next step in my abundant prosperity. And things will come to you in ways that you never thought of. And you kind of sit back and go, that's pretty interesting. I wouldn't have thought of going that way, but hey, why not?
Exactly.
At least that's what I say.
I agree with you wholeheartedly. I mean, for me as well, what you just said about the next step, when I was in business, international business, I had a diary that was filled a year ahead, okay?
Wow.
Everything was planned out. Everything was scheduled. And in the mid-90s, when, you know, the call of spirit just became overwhelming, it's like, get on with the real job. And I took that leap of love into the unknown. What I had was some incredible experiences, that spiritual experiences that really showed me, you know, we only need to know one step ahead. And yet I think when we are in that fear paradigm, we want to see not just one step ahead, or even have a sense of it. We want to see the next and the next and the next. Of course, that's not how the cosmos works. That's not how spirit works. You know, when we do try and close down that pathway, that's exactly what it does. It limits the possibilities. It limits the magic. It limits the miracles. If we're willing to take that leap of faith, if we are leap of love, and if we are just prepared to just go with the one step ahead, that step, in my experience, always takes us in the right direction. There is no wrong direction.
Yeah, exactly. You know, it's necessary.
Yeah.
Because people get set in their ways, and if they don't take that leap, they can't be shaken out of it.
Exactly.
And that makes it really, really difficult, because then they become more and more stuck. And like in your step number three, into great. Yeah, I love that. I never thought about that word that way. I'm always telling people to integrate themselves, but, you know, into great. I love that. That should be in the spiritual dictionary, you know.
It should be, and that comes courtesy of a dear friend of mine, Kelly Daigle, who used to be in Texas, and Kel said that once to me. I went, yes, that's so right.
Yeah, absolutely. I love that because, you know, people forget. They're always like trying to learn, get more information, get more, get more, get more. And sometimes they might stop and they might be able to, you know, tell somebody else about it, but they're in such a headlong rush to get more, and they never integrate into themselves. And I've seen a lot of that in my practice. And one of the things that I noticed is, you know, these 72-year-olds are coming in and telling me, well, you know, I've taken this class and I've taken that class and I've been to this workshop and to that workshop and yada, yada, yada. And I'm going, you know, I don't care how many darn workshops you've been to. If you have not figured out how to integrate that into yourself,
exactly,
then you don't get it.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I agree with you, and I found the same thing as well. And I know for both of us, and you know, our work is empowering other people to empower themselves, but that integration is key. I mean, the old initiates, the spiritual adepts, always used to say any initiation is made of three parts. I describe it as the instigation, when either you know or you feel or you just show up for a lesson, a life lesson, an experience. The second one is the experience itself, what I call the intuition, inner tuition, the inner teaching. But the third part, which is absolutely key, is the one that we're talking about, that people don't then often do, is the integration. And without that integration, as you say, you just keep going round and round the houses. And sure, you go to a workshop, or sure, you go to a healer or a therapist or whatever, whatever. But you're just going round and round. You're not actually moving forward. You're not really taking those steps into wholeness, which do require that in-breath, that time, that space to really go within and see what that lesson, see what that experience really is teaching you, and helping you to literally integrate about yourself. So I totally agree with you.
Yeah, absolutely. And again, it's another fear thing.
Yeah.
A lot of people are afraid to stop even for a moment and take a breath and see, you know, what it really means to them, and then how they've changed once they've integrated it. You know, so they keep telling themselves the same tapes that they've had in their heads that their parents put in there and thinking that they haven't changed, whereas if they took a moment and really felt the changes that have happened, which, by the way, brings us to step number five, now, and living in the now, and you know, stopping this, as you call it, the illusory escape from the challenges of the present, the past, or the future, you know, and just really being in that now is so important to the integration process, wouldn't you say?
Absolutely. And, you know, I think there's two things. You know, the fourth step itself is what I say, show up. In other words, is to you know, to go with the flow of the universe and the cosmos and you know, to actually show up and undertake that learning. But to do that, you have to be in the now, as you say, because otherwise you're projecting your intention, your consciousness ahead, or you're going back into the past and replaying that. The now is the here, and the now is the only place we can co-create. And if we dissipate our energies into past and future, we don't have that fullness of presence to really you know, make our choices, do all that we do, be all that we are in the fullness of that possibility. So it's very important.
Absolutely. And that's the hardest thing with some people. And, you know, I've slipped into that myself where, you know, you get into telling somebody your story and you're so stuck in the past and those old horrible feelings come up again. And then the next thing that you ask yourself is, gee, why do I keep repeating those same things? It's like, well, you keep living it again, you know?
Yeah, well, exactly. You keep giving the energy, you keep living it again. I think the other thing as well is that, you know, within the eighth chakra, it is called the eighth chakra because the eighth chakra for me is the universal heart. It is the first, if you like, of the levels of awareness beyond our personality. And so what I find with people, as you do with your work, is if people stay at the level of awareness of that personal self, that's where all the trauma's held. That's where all the imprints are held. So if you actually stay at that level of awareness, just as Albert Einstein used to say, you know, you can't solve a problem from the same level of awareness that created it. So it's actually going at that higher level of awareness that you can then see more clearly, understand more clearly, but also be more compassionate with yourself. Because I think one of the things that we do, as you say, when we go round and round the old patterns, is we continue to beat ourselves up about them, and we continue to have a go at everyone else involved with them. Mm-hmm. And all of it really is held at that level of that personal self of the Jude and the Valerie. And when we can go into the eighth chakra, and the book shows people how to do that, we literally are in that place of love, and not conditional love, which is the personality-based love, but the unconditional love of spirit, to really see what those patterns are and to understand how to release them.
Absolutely. And then release is one of my favorite things. In fact, I just had a session myself today that was just mind-blowing, and worked on helping my sister at the same time, so actually my whole family. But, you know, I keep telling people, you have to let go of those old bad feelings and to empty the glass in order to be able to put new stuff in it. So, like, chuck out the old dirty water that's got flies and stuff in it, and, you know, just put the new stuff in it.
Absolutely.
About you know, the flies and the mold and all that stuff. You know, let's put the new stuff in there. And so, you know, that's another reason why I really love the way that you wrote these steps out, because some people are so linear and so left brain that they have got to have these things in a step-by-step way to do it. And I love how you chunked it down so that it's very simple. And, you know, it's like they can go one at a time and go, okay, let me research how to do that. Okay, how does that work in my life? And then they can move on to the next step, and it's not like huge chapters on each one. So you allow people to go ahead and, you know, figure out how it works in their own lives. Like with the sixth step, mutual respect, love, and gratitude. And I love that. I love that because it's not preaching to somebody. It's just kind of saying, hey, you know, what would you like? Yeah. You know, exactly. How do you want to move through the universe?
Exactly. And again, you know, we learn these in our own lives and how that is. And I find that, you know, when we do respect others, and this is what I feel is very important. You know, one of the things that I've sort of been looking at over the last few weeks is this response, in the world and especially in the States to the Nobel Committee giving Obama the Nobel Peace Prize. And I've been very interested how some people have, especially around the world, have gone, this is fantastic. And others have said, this is ridiculous. And others have said, but he hasn't earned it. I think what he's been showing around the world, and I see a lot of his overseas stuff as well as his domestic stuff, is what I call mutual respect.
Mm-hmm.
And how that changes the way people respond. It's quite
amazing. And the thing is, it goes beyond telling them that you respect them. It's having the respect in your heart and in your mind. And, you know, instead of thinking everybody's an idiot and they're all, you know, out to get you and they're all terrible, you know, instead of see that they are humans that are infused with the spirit of the One, and that's really, we're all part of the One. We're not going to be disconnected from that, but we're all just playing these little parts. I think that's the way you can look at it. It's like I had so many people here that thought I was crazy in Sedona because, you know, they hated George Bush. And, you know, they were trying to do all kinds of things, you know, spiritually, you know, to stop him from being able to do anything. And I kind of sat there and went, you know, I don't particularly like what he's doing. But I have to say that it would take a really strong spirit to walk into that spot.
I agree.
To cause the change in humanity that he caused, to get everybody riled up enough and out of their lazy boys and put the Cheetos and the beer down and turn off the TV.
Yep, absolutely.
And so, I respect him for that.
And I do too. And I was in the States at the time of the election, and, you know, over the years, I did see America becoming more and more polarized. But if you actually understand the sort of the sort of esoteric, metaphysical understanding of that, you realize that you had to get to that point to then return to a wholeness, return to an integration. And I often say to guys, you know, without a Bush, there wouldn't have been an Obama.
Right. Exactly.
So all of this is our collective, our holographic journey forward. And you were saying earlier about your own healing was also helping to heal your sister and your family. And that is the reality. We are all one. So as we do this inner work within ourselves, as I'm sure many, if not all of our listeners will appreciate, that ripples out. It ripples out through our families, through our communities, through our collective, because as I write elsewhere in the eighth chakra, you know, we don't only have these emotional patterns on personal levels. It, guess what? It's exactly the same patterns that we play out on collective levels.
Mm-hmm.
So
exactly.
as we understand and go through this, you know, the solar journeys, the solar hero's journey within ourselves and the healing journeys within ourselves, you know, we're also going through it on collective levels.
Absolutely. No one gets healed alone.
No, absolutely. How could they?
Yeah, they can't. You know, that was something that was taught to me years ago by one of my shamanic teachers, and I thought about it, and I said, well, yeah, that makes sense, because we are all one, so any healing in one heals the rest.
Yeah.
And we experience all of these things, you know, as not only as a sounding board, but also as a way to come up with a solution from another level. And I've seen this happen so many times in doing spiritual healings on people. And it's like, wow, everybody that's in the room gets that part of their psyche healed. It's really amazing.
It is incredible, isn't it? I do similar work in workshops, what I call universal, which is eight chakra, universal heart-centered soul healing. And when people, it is phenomenal. It is absolutely wonderful to see that ripple of healing and feel it, and for people to sort of end the day and be able to go forward in a whole new way because of that group healing, that personal and the group healing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's amazing. Which brings us to the seventh step, hear and listen. And, you know, one of the first things I was taught by one of my shamanic healers was listen and don't hesitate. Because when spirit speaks to you and through you, miracles can happen. But you have to be willing to accept it. Of course, not something that's really wacko. You know, I mean, I saw this one guy do some stuff that was really ultimately stupid. But but before he got to that stage, he was pretty wise. And, you know, I mean, I guess maybe because I'm a doctor, you know, it's like, okay, you don't pack dirt into somebody's open chest cavity. You just don't do that, you know?
No.
And so when you see stuff like that going on, you go, okay, somewhere along the line, they start listening to their ego and not to the real spirit.
Yeah.
Because the real spirit always acts in love and always acts in kindness and tries to make things easier for the person, not worse for them.
Absolutely.
So, you know, this whole hearing and listening thing, you know, you got to get the ego out of the way. And I love that you talk in there about your ego self being imbalanced and the danger, you know, as you access the higher energies if you don't have your ego in balance.
Mm. I think that's right. I mean, what I've found over many years is that when we do wake up to the universal heart, which I do feel is intrinsic to this shift of consciousness that's accelerating now, is then we do begin to move beyond that ego. I say we don't become ego-less, because I think having an ego is part of the deal of coming down and incarnating into a human form, but we become progressively ego-free.
I would agree with that, or the ego just kind of takes its place, which is to protect the body.
Exactly.
Yeah,
but
so it goes to its proper place.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Yeah, and then what helps too is the eighth step, loving truth.
Yeah.
Now this is my favorite thing, Judith. I have to tell you, I just love the truth and the truth of love.
Yeah.
once you've experienced that totally, and I know a lot of people have not had a near-death experience or a miraculous spiritual occurrence that's happened yet, and all I can say is, you know, I've been blessed with that, and truth and love are really all that there is.
Yeah. Yeah. I wholeheartedly agree. And being authentic and lovingly true, not just with other people, but with ourselves.
Especially with ourselves.
Especially with ourselves. Because in a way, unless we can be lovingly true with ourselves, we, you know, it's difficult to then reflect that in our relationships with others. But I think sometimes, and I'm sure you've heard that, you've been told this, and I'm sure many of our listeners have, people say, oh, I can't say that to someone because I feel it would hurt them, you know. Mm-hmm. And I say, well, you know, if you speak the truth with love, in my experience, it can never hurt someone. Mm-hmm. And often people will not say something that really does need to be said if people are going to be open and truly loving with each other. You know, because if you don't say something to a friend or a partner or that really you feel in your heart you would want to say and do want to say, then really that instead of deepening the relationship, pulls away from it. Mm-hmm. So I think it being lovingly true, and that means listening to others as well as speaking our own truth with love, I think is key to any deepening of our relationships. They become real relationships then, because otherwise they're not fully real, they're not fully authentic.
Right, because if you're holding something back, you're not in it completely. It's like you're not in the now. You know, you're too busy worrying about, well, should I really tell them that? And, oh, no, that wouldn't be a good thing. So you're not even present in the conversation.
Yeah, exactly, exactly.
Yeah, and then, here's the other good one, the ninth step, discernment. I love that one. That's a tough one, you know?
Yeah. I wrote an article the other day, said I never said it was easy.
Yeah, I love that you got in here, you know, do not judge another lest you yourself be judged. But there's also, you know, knowing the difference between what's right and what's not right and what's true and what's untrue. And, I mean, discernment is so far-reaching. And, I mean, I have had some really, really hard discernment lessons that were very, very painful. And, you know, now I'm at a better point where I listen to my inner voice. And if my inner voice says, stay the hell away from that person, I won't give them a chance. And everybody says, oh, you should give them a chance. I say, oh, no. That's what my mother told me, and that's what got me in a lot of trouble my whole life.
Yeah.
And now I'm like, nope, I don't need to judge them. I don't need to know. I just know I don't want to be anywhere near that person because they're going to be trouble for me.
And that is exactly the difference between judgment and discernment. You know, when we judge, we project onto someone. We project our own views onto that person or to or that situation. But as you say, the discernment, on the other hand, said, how does this feel for me? Does this feel right for me? And when it doesn't, then, you know, then act accordingly. Or when it does act accordingly. But I think a lot of people go through this step and they try very hard not to judge, but they then don't move to discernment. They just become completely passive. And everything's okay sort of thing, when their heart and their gut is saying, this isn't right, this doesn't feel right. And they're suppressing that rather than recognizing that that's the loving empowerment of discernment, which is how you've just beautifully expressed it.
Well, thank you. You know, and it helps that I have your book sitting in front of me so I can I can remind myself of these things. But it's so funny the way they're segueing one into another, because the 10th step is honoring experience. And, you know, that isn't that basically what we were just talking about, you know, to accept our experiences and what we've learned and to move on into a higher consciousness by using those experiences to boost us.
Absolutely. But as you know, and I'm sure many of our listeners will recognize, you know, to honor experience, those other steps that we've talked about are key, because we can't honor experience unless, for example, we've taken the responsibility for our choices. Because as we've journeyed in the other steps and danced the dance of those steps, then we realize that every experience has the potentiality for us to learn, for us to grow, for us to heal. And therefore, with that awareness that comes from all of the steps, we can truly honor the experience and realize that essentially nothing happens by accident. It always has a purpose. It always has a meaning. And when we integrate that experience and that understanding, we can truly honor the experience and then not hold on to it, but allow the experience to flow through us so that we can journey on.
And that's a big part. And, you know, just the whole Buddhist thing about, you know, detachment and, you know, understanding that everything that we go through is really about the experience and
yeah.
about becoming more of who we really are. And, you know, you don't have to hold whatever it is you've experienced forever, especially if it's painful.
Absolutely.
You know, I'm always saying, hey, wash that stuff out of there.
Yeah, honor it by releasing it. Honor it by releasing it. Don't,
yeah.
As you say, you don't have to be holding on to it. And in fact, that's just, you know, what we, and again, this comes back to judgment. You know, what we judge good and what we judge bad, we sort of put into our baggage that we carry around with us. Hey, why do we do that? You know, we're divine beings of light able to connect beyond all limitations of space and time. So why would we feel the need to hold on to something that's available throughout the, you know, the cosmos for any different experience to flow through us?
Absolutely. And of course, then that brings us to the 11th step, the golden rule. And, you know, I know so many people are so disheartened nowadays by the bad things that are happening to good people. And they're saying, well, you know, the golden rule is out the door, and, you know, what does it really mean? But I look at it as a way to really discover compassion within ourselves and to really start to want to behave as a universal citizen where you care about everyone and yet you're still detached, but you understand that everything that happens is happening for the experience of it and to help us to grow up into these responsible cosmic beings.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, with all the years that I've journeyed and studied and experienced, you know, the golden rule is the one. It comes through in every spiritual teaching in some way or form. And 11 is the number of mastery. And this is the 11th step. You know, we can live the golden rule. People say to me, what would transform the world? And I say, well, living the golden rule would transform the world in a moment.
Right. And if everybody would do that, you know, we'd have a lot less of this crap going on that we've got right now.
Yeah.
You know, and instead of the, you know, hooray for me, piss on you, we could have the, oh, we don't want to do that because, you know, we wouldn't like that. You know, that would be a much kinder, gentler world.
Exactly. And, you know, as the universe is recreated and co-created anew in every moment in the eternal now, you have the moment to choose different. You have every opportunity, every moment to make a different choice.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, if yesterday or an hour ago or a minute ago, you didn't choose to live the golden rule, make the choice now to do it. And don't beat yourself up if you don't come to that attainment, but keep showing up. And you know, keep understanding that living the golden rule isn't about just changing, you know, it changes you and it changes the world. It changes your entire experience of what the world is.
Exactly. And of course, that brings us to the 12th step of cosmic service. And isn't that exactly what you're doing when you're living the golden rule?
Yeah, yeah. And that is the true, for me, that is the true guruing up, spelled G-U-R-U. In other words, you become your own inner guru in that sense. But you realize that, you know, the world isn't in service to you. You are here to be in service. You are here ultimately. To be in wholeheartedly loving, abundant, joyous service.
Absolutely. And to realize the miracles in life and share them with other people, you know, is part of the service. You know, I keep meeting people that say, oh, I'm not important. You know, I don't do anything. And, you know, I just look at them and I say, you know, I happen to know that there are plenty of people who think that they're not important and they don't do any good. But if you're sitting there praying for the enlightenment of the world, or praying for the children, or praying that the prisoners will be calm, or whatever it is that you're doing that's important to you, that you do on a daily basis or an hourly basis or whatever, that is cosmic service.
Yes, it is.
And it's more important than the people that are making gazillions of dollars and running around just enjoying themselves, because what you're doing is providing something that happens to be in too short of a supply so far and could make a huge difference in the lives of all those people you're praying for.
Absolutely. And, you know, it's not an either-or, it's a both in every way. You know, I'm not talking about the guys who are earning gazillions, because most of the guys who are earning gazillions are really in it for themselves.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, that's also going back to what we were saying earlier about Mr. Bush and all the rest of it, is everybody's here for a purpose. And if all our experience is holographic, we're all reflecting to each other. Mm-hmm. So as we step up, as we do whatever we feel we can, all of it is adding to this shift of consciousness. All of it is taking us collectively forward as solar heroes. And I think that, you know, but what I would say now is the prayer is, I feel like, as you do, the prayer is hugely important. But what I'd really like to say as well is I feel that there is now a call to action in very manifest, you know, in those ways as well. It was interesting listening to Olympia Snow earlier today when she voted for the healthcare reforms. And she said, history's calling.
Mm.
And also, I remember Obama saying in the election campaign, he quoted Martin Luther King about the urgency of the now. And I really do feel, without sort of, with love, not with fear in any way, but we are in a time frame and a consciousness shifting moment where we've brought ourselves, in my perspective, to the edge of the abyss of, you know, we really are in a global emergency.
Mm-hmm.
But we have the most incredible cosmic support and the support of our collective psyche, which is in a tidal shift of awareness to actually co-creating an emergence and literally a new cosmic age. But we have to really be those solar heroes that we are capable of being, and show up and help to bring that about.
Absolutely.
In whatever tiny way or huge way we're called. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, this is, you know, I had said something to you last week about when I asked you to be on the show, about the importance. Something was coming up tonight that we had to speak about, and neither one of us had any clue, but this is one of the, I love it when that happens, you know. I just try to leave it open for spirit to work through me, you know, because sometimes, you know, I don't get told anything because I'd be going, you know what, God, I don't think so, especially like when I went across the country, it was way, if I'd known, oh, hell no.
yeah, absolutely. Like me with the 13th step, it was like, oh, no, I don't think I will. But, you know, you do, and you show up, and you walk.
Yeah, exactly. So I think, you know, something that you just said is so vitally important, and that's that there is a call to action right now.
Yeah.
It's like, this is not a drill. You know, this is real life. And you are being notified to cover your butts, but to get up and walk out and do the job that you are supposed to be doing, because there's no more time left.
No.
You know, it's not a time for people to sit around and go, oh, you know, somebody's going to come and save us, or, you know, oh, the ETs are going to show up and we'll be taken off this planet and all the nasty people will be, you know, left here to burn.
Oh,
you know, it's not that type of a thing. It's like, no, this is your soul's purpose that is screaming at you now to get up off your duff and do what it is that's been put in front of you to do. And, you know, if you don't know what that is, you know, ask your guidance to show you what it is, because we all have an important job to do right now. This is a pivotal point in humanity's history. And, you know, it could go either way. You know, if the atom bombs get unleashed on one portion of the world, it's going to affect the entire world.
Yeah.
So.
And that's exactly right.
Yeah. I mean, you know, and this whole thing, like with the swine flu, they release it in one section, any place in the world, and it goes throughout the entire world.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's not a thing to scare people and to say, oh, gosh, you know, you got to do this now or we're going to die. No. It, you know, first of all, our spirits are safe. They're always safe.
Yeah.
You know, the body might die, and
yeah,
the body wouldn't
the
like that, but, you know, but really, you, your spirit still survives. And so, you know, everything that I've seen and that I've felt lately is showing me that the time is now. We have to step up now. We have to stand up as individuals wherever we are, in cities, in states, you know, in government centers, wherever, and point out when something is wrong. And don't let the people get away with it.
No, I so love what you're saying, because I've got one note in front of me that says the silent majority must now speak and act and do what's right.
Ah, uh-huh.
Because, you know, as I've been watching over the summer all the sort of the debates and the healthcare stuff and all the rest of it, and I've been absolutely disappointed and saddened by the level of vitriol and the level of fear and that's been going around. And yet I know from, you know, all my visits to the States and all my friends in the States, just how much potential there is there for heroism, for the solar heroes to really manifest themselves. And they are in many, many different ways. I was involved in the launch of something called World Shift 2012, launched in London a few weeks ago. And then I went to Japan, and I've been doing a lot of work in Japan. And this need for the change and those that have been silent to take their place, to be empowered and do what they can do what we all can do, follow our hearts, show up, hear and listen, all these steps of the solar heroes, it really is the urgency of the now. You know, we have huge issues that we need not just to face, but we can find ways of resolving around the climate, around looking after each other.
Yeah.
You know, in so many ways, changing the economic system, which was always unsustainable and is now broken. We can't try and go back to the old unsustainable paradigm, which is polarized and separated and disempowered so many, but to go forward, as you're saying, and I'm wholeheartedly agreeing, we do have to take that leap into love and show up and play our unique role as part of a collective shift.
Absolutely. And, you know, I was really interested. I met some new people this last week, and they're much younger than I am, and it was really interesting to hear them speak. Because so many people now in the U.S. are doing this grassroots thing where people are going to the barter system, and, of course, the IRS hates that, you know, because they want their money. And, you know, if you don't tell them exactly what's going on, then, you know, they don't like that at all.
No, they
and
don't.
And so, you know, they try to make it illegal. And my point in this has always been, you know what, the barter system has been around a lot longer than this fake money thing that they got us into so many years ago. And, you know, people need to take care of each other. And they can do that with a barter system, because you trade, you know, your services for someone else's services. And, you know, you're taking care of the people in your community.
Yeah.
And, you know, this is going to sound really weird probably, but I think that we all ought to just, you know, not charge a darn thing for our services. Get everybody together and just trade back and forth, and don't worry about it. You know, do what you love to do. Do it really well.
Yeah.
You know, just trade your hours, you know, 20 hours for 20 hours or whatever.
Yeah.
And let it go, you know, and stop all this money-grubbing crap that's going on, because really it hasn't brought us to any good.
I would argue it's brought us to huge, you know, dysfunctionality, actually. I mean, I'm a... One of the things I used to be in another life, was an international finance person. So I know how this stuff works, and I know how it doesn't work. And, you know, the old way, even with money, and I wholeheartedly agree with you about the bartering, but, you know, if money is the servant of trade and just allows to flow, it's just energy. The problem that's happened over the last period of time is so-called financial services have grown like they are a predator. They're not based on serving people. They're based on making a huge amount of money for very few people. And they are the ones really who've broken that whole system. And as you know, and I know around the world, those vested interests are still trying to go back to that point. But I think there is such a move forward now on so many different levels of awareness. I'll give you an example. The Japanese have just brought in a new government. After 54 years, they decided enough was enough of the old party. And the new guy coming in and the new party coming in have been talking to the people of Bhutan, who base their whole society on the gross national happiness model.
I love that.
Isn't that cool?
Yeah.
And so the Japanese incoming government have invited the Bhutanese to go over and show them how it's done. And in France, President Sarkozy has done something similar. And there are now some Nobel laureates who are coming in and saying, actually, the old way of measuring economies was completely inadequate and unsustainable, and we've got to move to a whole new way of understanding well-being and placing economic activity in that much bigger context, and also moving economies, you know, that recognizing that economies have to serve people instead of people serving economies.
Exactly, and get away from the whole money-grubbing thing. I mean, I have seen people do things that have really made me cry just to think about it, just over money.
Yeah.
I mean, horrible things. I've seen people killed over $20
yeah.
or less sometimes.
Yeah.
And, you know, because I had so many years in the emergency room.
Yeah, so you
that.
Saw
you see
that.
Man's inhumanity to fellow man.
Yeah.
And over money?
Yeah. Exactly.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
You know, that just is so disheartening, so shocking that people would think that they could get anything from it, as if they could get happiness from doing such an act and having some material thing for a few moments, which then they have to guard because somebody else is going to try to take it away from them because
exactly.
It's karma.
Exactly.
I mean, it's just craziness. You know, the world needs to come to its senses.
And
you know, more voices are getting raised about that now.
Yeah. I mean, I'm very encouraged that those voices are being raised, as I know you are. But it's down to all of us, as we've been saying this evening. It's down to every single one of us, because every single one of us, however small, can do something.
Exactly.
And it's, as you say, doing that something that's in front of us, and doing it with love, doing it as well as we can, and just taking that next step and then that next step, because we're all in this together. And again, Martin Luther King used to say, we're either going to drown separately as fools, or we will swim together as brothers. And this has got to be the time when we come together and swim together as brothers and sisters.
I absolutely agree. That's awesome. I love that you brought that up. And, you know, I told you, Jude, that you had something really important to say tonight. I didn't know what it was, but I knew that you had to be on because there was something that was so important that had to go out there across the airwaves. And, you know, bless you for bringing that out, because that is something I would like people to pay attention to and to really take their stand, you know.
Yeah.
Which side are they on? Do they serve the light or not?
Yeah. Do they take, you know, all hold hands and take this leap into love together? Or do they retreat into the diminishment of fear? We have such an amazing opportunity, and it is the urgency of the now, but my goodness me, this is what we came here to do. So let's do it. And we can.
Yeah. I feel like an old warrior that's been sitting around, you know, filing my nails for the last 40 years going, all right, when are we going to get this on? And you hear a lot of squabbling out in the courtyard, you know, and it's like, oh, for crying out loud, you know, I'm going to go out there and kick somebody's butt.
Well, girl, the time is now. Stop filing those nails. Get going.
That's right. Put on that armor, get out there, and let's do it. Yeah, it's really an amazing time, you know, and I know a lot of people are really frightened. And the best thing that I can say for you is, you know what? What would be the worst thing? What if you lose all of your money? What if you lose your home? What if you lose all of your clothes and all of your favorite little trinkets? What then? You haven't lost you.
Exactly.
You're still there.
Exactly.
You can still move through the world. You can still make a difference. One person does make a difference.
Yeah.
So don't ever think that you're worthless. Don't ever think that because you don't have enough money or you don't have enough brains or whatever, you're not famous. Don't think that you can't do something, because that would be an erroneous thought line. The fact is, we all have a job to do. We all are powerful beings, even if we don't quite remember it right now in these bodies. But that is the truth. And now it's time in this game to get out there and make the score before it's too late.
Yeah.
Well,
I
boy, that hour went really
agree.
Quick.
And what did. And thank you, Valerie, and thanks to all of our listeners. And guys, if you're listening out there, we are all in this together, and it is the most incredible opportunity for us. So let's just show up and we're coming home. We really
Absolutely.
Are coming home to what can be truly heaven on Mother Earth, but we need to make it happen.
Absolutely. Wonderful. Thank you so much for being on, Jude.
Oh,
as usual, it's a lot of fun. It's always enlightening, and I'll have to have you on again for the 13th step. And we'll have more interesting things to say, I'm sure.
We haven't even started yet.
I know. We could go on for another 4 hours, couldn't we? Well, this is all we get to channel for tonight. But, yeah, definitely it's wonderful having you on, and I'm looking forward to having you on again. And I know
Thank
the
you.
Listeners are, too. So until the next time, and... I got to get myself to sit down and read that, because I've been, you know, crazy busy, but that's my job to do. One of my jobs to do is read this stuff and get that information out there. So thank you again for being on, and look forward to it again. And listeners, we have been listening to Dr. Jude Kurovan, who has written Cosmos, the Eighth Chakra, the 13th Step, and what's the other book, Jude?
The first book I did, Valerie, was called The Wave, and that was, it seems forever ago, but it was only 2005. I wrote 4 books in 3 years, so it's like, whoa, book time.
That's odd. That one I haven't read, but I have read the first two, so my next one, hopefully I can have you on in the next month or so. Hopefully I can get to it by then. But, yeah, lots of really important information that you have in there, guideposts for people to walk a better life. So thank you for writing them.
Oh, bless you, Valerie. Thank you. And thanks to Spirit and my guides who show me the way. And thanks
Absolutely.
To all our listeners. It's been great fun.
Yep. Well, that's what it's supposed to be, isn't it?
Yeah. Yeah. Big time.
All right. So until next week. And we'll see what happens next week. But boy, the times, they are a-heating up. So things are going to start pretty quick now, people. And, you know, it's time to pull out the stops, time to gird up the armor, the spiritual armor, and get ready. Because we've got quite the roller coaster ride that we're going to be going on in the next couple of years. And, you know, the steps into the cosmic consciousness are awaiting. So it's up to you to start walking up those steps. And as always, our lovely sponsor is Hydromay Skin Nutrition. You can find them at www.hydramay.com, HYDRAME.com. All natural, organic skin nutrition. Please do give them a try. So until next week, be happy, be healthy, and be who you really are. Nighty night.
Awaken.